This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. It is time for Wells Tech. This is episode 427 for Tuesday, January 12th, 2016. I'm Martin Spriggs, show about technology and ministry, Wells Tech is, and joining me to chat about this and that and the other thing, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. You never know what we're going to chat about on Wells.
That's what I think keeps people coming back. There's always something there, so you never know what you're going to get. It's kind of like a potluck.
You
kind of know what to expect, but exactly what shape or form it takes, you're never quite sure. So
I tell my husband that when we go garage sailing, you just have to be open to the possibilities. You just never know.
That's right. We try and do that. We've done that for 427 times, and we're going to do it again today. This is the day of the month where we talk about our work in progress. It's not our magnum opus, but it's our attempt at writing a book. And we decided that there was a topic that was maybe underserved in the Christian community, and that was books about project management. Project management put to good use by churches, by schools, other faith-based organizations. A lot of regular old project management stuff we talk about, but kind of with a Christian flavor to it. You know, the stakes are a little bit higher when we manage projects that we believe God is asking us to do. So that's what we're doing, and we are up to, what chapter are we on here? Is this 4 or 5?
I think this is chapter 5, actually, our 5th installment of With All Your Heart. That's the title we've given to the book, and I don't know about you, Martin, but this one was quite interesting for me. It's all about scheduling and how to manage that calendar, which can be a real challenge in terms of projects. We start off with the best intentions, but it's not too difficult to get behind very quickly on projects. So having good calendaring skills is probably a very key component to the success of your project.
Yeah, there were a lot of different ways we could go with this chapter as we kind of thought about the different topics that might come into play when a project manager or project leader is trying to figure out how to put things together, how to line up tasks, how they relate to one another, or even where to start. And I think that's a challenge in a lot of church or school projects. You've got a big thing like a big VBS or a big event, or even medium or small size things. You're not always quite sure how to get things going. And that's kind of the topic of scheduling. What comes first, what comes second, and then how to make them all fit together.
Yep, and there's lots of software tools out there. We talk about many of them in this chapter. We've talked about them in the past on the podcast at various times. But I think it starts even before you address your needs with software. I think it has to do with project scope and understanding all the pieces. I like to kind of take a step back and have a vision of the whole process and how the pieces need to fit together, what order they need to happen in. Just kind of get that broad vision before you begin the nuts and bolts of scheduling.
Yep, and I think that's that holds up well for any size project. And we begin the book by, or begin this chapter by going back to the book of Nehemiah and looking at that project management effort and how he began the project of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And if you're familiar with that book at all, he got back to Jerusalem, and one of the first things that he did is he took a little midnight ride and surveyed the situation. So he took his time before he even got together the project team or said one word to a member of the team or anybody in the city. He kind of needed to know what the lay of the land was. What shape things are in, and kind of in his own mind figured out what all the tasks are. And we call that section of the book, or subsection of this chapter, surveying, just kind of taking that wide view of, you know, all the things that are out there, and then getting those down in some kind of organized fashion, so that you're not missing the forest from the trees, so to speak. You're figuring out is this bigger than a bread box? And, you know, what are all the moving parts? Not necessarily doing the scheduling right there, but at least kind of putting a stake in the ground saying, hey, these are all the things that maybe we need to be thinking about.
And yeah, definitely a wise project leader would take the time to do this, and maybe even jump into some software to help them once they've, you know, envisioned the process, taken their notes, whatever. One piece of software that we've talked about in the past in the book and that we bring up again in this chapter is mind mapping. And not sure if our listeners all use mind maps, but I can tell you that mind maps for me have just been a huge benefit, especially when it comes to things like this, where I just have a lot of different ideas and I need to just lay them out and try to get some organization to them.
Yep. The thing I like most about mind maps are their flexibility. You just throw a lot of stuff at it in any kind of random order, and then you leave the organization till later, versus kind of the outline approach where you kind of have to begin organizing as you're putting stuff on it. Mind maps, not so much. You can kind of think, you know, around topics and get those, get all those tasks, or even just kind of stuff that you don't know what to do with. You know, I know I need to do this, but I'm not sure where it goes or what it is. Is this a task? Is this a sub-project? Is this even worth worrying about? Get it down and then kind of deal with it in the greater context. So that whole survey process is really critical to doing that. Just taking your time rather than jumping right in. A lot of people think, well, in order to make some progress, I guess got to start. And, you know, you'll read that too. Just mm-hmm. get started. But I think that before you do that, it's worthwhile kind of taking that big picture view. And then you can kind of go to the next step, which is kind of understanding the relationship of one task to another. And I think one really common mistake a lot of people make is, you know, they put their to-do list together, their task list together, but they never relate one to another. What needs to precede what? What depends on the other? And that task dependency, figuring out what comes first, second, third, or what relies on what, is critical to understand how long this is going to take and really on what to focus. If you want to do some parallel tasks, you can only do that so far until you understand, you know, how one task might relate to another.
Probably a great time, Martin, to push the pause button and remind folks of one of the features of With All Your Heart, the book that we're writing together, and that is that we have a whole collection of what we're terming artifacts or resources, where we've shown you examples and given you templates and things like that as each chapter progresses. And we chose to use a Vacation Bible School project as our sample run through the project methodology we're explaining. And we'll have a link in the show notes. We'll have a VBS mind map where it shows some of these kind of dependencies and things, so you can actually visualize what that might look like if you're doing your own project survey and dependencies and setting them up. So be sure to visit our website, withallyourheart.tech, and look for those resources with each chapter, and with this chapter in particular, the VBS planning mind map, because I think that'll give you a good idea of what it is we're describing.
Yep, and that's a timely topic, because I think about now, folks are beginning to think about those kinds of things because they're only a few months away. So that topic is, for many of our listeners, I'm sure, very timely. So you've got the survey. You have an understanding of how one task relates to another, you know, the task dependency portion. Now the project is going forward. The next section was really a critical one, and we called it checkups. A checkup process, or maybe even check-in process, would be where the project lead is trying to stay connected with the people doing the work and making sure things are on track, or that the people that are assigned these tasks have all the tools and support that they need, or maybe even just to step in and encourage them. I find that sometimes if people just have these one-off tasks, they're out there kind of on an island, it's helpful for them to talk to somebody, to ask questions, to collaborate, to make sure that they understand that, hey, they're not alone and that their task is important in the larger context as well. So the checkup section really talks about that process and some of the ways that you can do that without kind of micromanaging. I think that's maybe a concern. Well, if I'm checking up on them, they might feel that I'm looking over their shoulder and, you know, maybe they don't think I'm doing a good job. That's not it at all. It's really kind of a partnership concept where you're kind of keeping your finger on the pulse of all the tasks just to make sure things keep moving along and no one task sticks the project, kind of, you know, stops the project, you know, right in its tracks.
So something to put on your schedule is regular checkups, and that, I don't know, as a team member on different projects I've worked on, I begin to look forward to those because oftentimes maybe I'm responsible for one section of a project and someone else is off doing their section of a project. Maybe in the VBS scenario, I would be doing, you know, publicity and registration stuff while the teachers are preparing and the decorators are working on ideas and things like that. But when we all come together, things may come out that help us in our various tasks. So even though it seems like we're very directed in a particular area, we still need to communicate with each other and hear what's going on and what roadblocks people have hit that might affect the progress that I'm making as well. So
yep, absolutely
important stuff.
Here we kind of inserted one of our, what we call our tool time tips, and one of the funner ones, I think, so to speak, is something called follow up then. Pastor Rob Gunther has recommended this to us, and we thought this would be a tool that would be kind of handy to have in your tool belt. It's kind of an email. It kind of rides on top of email, and the ability to send an email with to a particular address, and then you get the benefit of it coming back to you at a particular time. So if you kind of go to the site, you can kind of read through. There's a video there that talks about how this all works. But for example, you could use the email address tomorrow at follow up then, or next Wednesday at follow up then, or every day at follow up then, or every third Wednesday at follow up then, which would give you kind of that reminder when you need it to say, hey, I have to remember now to call this person. Or you could actually even remind them with this tool as well. Really powerful tool, and it leverages a tool that almost all of us use every day. And for the most part, I think the free version would work as well as anything for these kinds of tasks. So just kind of a little loop or reminder system that would help a project manager do these checkups, saying, hey, you know, it's been a week since maybe I communicated something. I need to follow up and see how things are going.
Yeah, I think it's super valuable, especially if you're like me and you kind of live in your email, to just know that the system's going to work for you. It's going to put that email in front of you when you tell it to. And, yeah. Very valuable. So finally, we're getting down to the part of the chapter where we actually talk about the calendar, the schedule. And I love it. You started off this section with a sign, danger, dates on calendar are closer than they appear. And boy, do I always feel that when I'm dealing with schedules. Things tend to sneak up on you. And it seems like maybe Vacation Bible School is a few months away, and all of a sudden you're behind and need to get a lot of work done very quickly. So scheduling is very, very important. Having the right scheduling tool is very important. You covered several in the tool times in this section.
Yeah, and there's lots of different options, you know, for this, lots of different calendaring options. But more so than the tool itself, it's what goes on the calendar. And There are many options here. You can put everything on the calendar, almost nothing on the calendar, but I would recommend that one of the first things that goes on the calendar is milestones. And milestones are kind of those things that are stakes in the ground that says we really need to be here, and then build out from there. So you can put tasks on there, you can put milestones on there, start and end dates, those kinds of things. That's really it. You really don't want to clutter the calendar with things that might happen. So the calendar is really kind of the hardscape of the project. So you really just want to nail things to the calendar that you know need to happen when, and then you have a clearer picture of how the project should progress.
And to me, I think those check-ins we talked about earlier tie to the milestones. Maybe, you know, that's what your big focus is. You determine these milestones and you have your meetings leading up to them, and it all kind of gels together with your schedule in place and those milestones, you know, dates specified. So
right.
Good stuff.
Probably one real key important thought about the calendar itself, no matter which one you choose, is it needs to be shareable. It needs to be something that can be collaborated on, that people can kind of stay in tune with. And so that was our PM focus for this chapter. We tried to find a group that made heavy use of a calendaring system, and in this case it was Google Calendar, do a quick interview with them and figure out how they're using it and how they continue to use it to kind of stay on task and keep everybody up to date. So we went out to, virtually, mm-hmm. Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School in Jackson, Wisconsin, not too far from my house, and talked with three folks out there who really leverage calendars in a lot of different ways. We talked to Aaron, Joshua, and Melanie about Melanie and Joshua Shanick and Aaron
Lobbs,
right, mm-hmm. Who were gracious enough to give us some of their time to talk through their calendar use. So why don't we listen to that interview now, and then we can come back and talk about some of the things that they shared.
So joining us today are a whole crew of folks from our Lutheran High School there in Jackson, Wisconsin, Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School. Happy to have Joshua Shanick and crew. So maybe I'll turn it over to you guys and you can introduce yourselves.
My name is Joshua Shanick. I'm the IT director, teacher, registrar, a couple other things at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School. These two lovely ladies sitting next to me are people that I work with quite often. My wife, Melanie Shanick, is the administrative assistant to the superintendent here. And Mrs. Erin Labs is one of our English teachers and is in charge of our drama productions.
Oh, awesome to have you guys. And I understand that you all have a fond place in your heart for Google Calendar, which is kind of what we wanted to talk to you about. So raise your hand if you're a Google Calendar fan kind of thing. Yeah. And hopefully it makes things run pretty well there at Kettle. We're wondering how many Google Calendars you have in your lives and what the different purposes are that you use Google Calendars.
I can start. I try not to keep track of how many I have because that's but I use Google Calendar to keep track of some of the personal stuff that's going on in my life, people's birthdays, reminders to pay my bills, those kind of things. I also use it for all the meetings and stuff that I attend here at Kettle with various people like you guys. It's integrated into Google Classroom that we use. So when I put assignments in Google Classroom, they automatically show up on my calendar for the school day. It also ties into our activities director and his assistant keep a calendar of everything that's going on here at Kettle. That's not in Google Calendar. It's in a separate system, but it feeds into Google Calendar. So you can choose which categories of events you want to feed into that. And so I have a couple of different calendars that feed in for that. So I could know when concerts are that are coming up or when particular activities are happening. I also share some calendars with these ladies. So Erin runs our drama productions. I do the technical part for a lot of those, lighting and sound and the set construction. So she creates a calendar that has all of the rehearsal schedules and all that in, and then she shares that with me, and I have that on my calendar to use. So I'll let you guys add anything.
You want to go first? Oh, go ahead. I counted up 12 calendars that I use in Google. Although some of them are more ones that I just set up, or maybe I guess administrate, if you want to use the word, because I've got my personal calendar, my work calendar. Like Josh said, I also have like birthdays and holidays. In addition to working here at Kettle, we also have two kids here at Kettle, so I also tie into the school calendar for events and things like that. I have two of my husband's calendars that feed into mine. I also have the superintendent's calendar, which is nice because then I obviously know what he's doing, and then I can add things to his calendar. And so that way, the other ones that I set up for school that I sort of administered for the office staff was just the school faculty and staff birthdays. So I set that one up, and then the front office secretary, when she does printed calendars and things that she shares with school, she takes it off there and puts weekly birthdays and things on for the faculty and staff. I had set up the school lunch calendar, which, again, the one of the ladies in the front office uses when they get the menu from the food service here at school. She puts the stuff in, and that actually is tied into our Kettle website, so she doesn't have to update the website. She just updates the Google Calendar. And then I also tried it this past summer for our faculty and staff vacations, when they were going to be on vacation, so that everybody could see when different people were not going to be around in the building and they wouldn't be able to contact them.
Wow. Besides all the uses that they mentioned also, they both working at Kettle maybe have a little bit better handle on each other's schedules occasionally. But my husband doesn't work at Kettle and is in grad school and also is working four different jobs as well. And so to try to keep track of that schedule is very helpful. And then also here at Kettle, Josh mentioned a little bit, I set up the drama rehearsal schedules using Google Calendar and share those with the students so that they always have an up-to-date, what we're rehearsing this night, what time the rehearsal is, and things like that. So that's very useful in my world also.
Yeah, well, there's drama mom, I'd appreciate that.
And then for Josh and me also, tends to be in my personal calendar, but I end up putting, our kids' events all in there, too, so that we're on the same page with that, which is very helpful.
So are there some go-to features that you really couldn't live without that have kind of made your calendar kind of the centerpiece of how you organize things there? What are kind of your favorite features? And then maybe also some things that frustrate you about Google Calendar.
I know for myself, I've been using an electronic device in my pocket for 10 plus years. It was a PDA at first and then a cell phone, and I've gone through iPhone and now I'm an Android user. And I don't know that I could live without having that information in my pocket, on my computer, at any computer that I go to. And I love the fact that it can feed in from other places and the sharing ability that somebody else can put some information in there. That's the part of it that I love.
The mobility of it, the collaboration of it, the sharing, the sharing features,
Frustrations that I have, I know, and I won't bash Apple users, but I know with my iPhone it was a lot harder to make multiple Google Calendars work correctly with.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Great. Ladies, anything?
I know one thing. It's not necessarily a specific calendar feature, but I couldn't live without the fact that I can make one tiny adjustment in the calendar, and everybody who needs access to that calendar automatically has that change. The students can always look in and see, check on updates or things like that, and because I don't have to make a new document, send them a new PDF, hope that they saw it before practice, and have, you know, all these different versions of it, whereas I just have one, and I can make those updates, and then they see those. That's absolutely invaluable to me.
Yeah, and like I both said, I really like the collaborative aspect of it. When I'm at work, I usually have a tab open on my computer with the calendar up just so that I can, you know, check it during the day. But then again, really like the fact that when I'm somewhere else, I can pull it up on my phone.
Awesome. Among the
among the faculty and staff there, do they have they kind of grabbed a hold of this and appreciate it as much as you all, or has it been kind of a learning curve for some of them? Where is the rest of the faculty and staff there at KML?
I would say that probably half of the staff use it on a regular basis. I think probably that those who have smartphones maybe use it a little bit more. And that may or may not because they have a phone. It might just be because they're a little more tech savvy. I think also some people who have more stuff on their calendar rely on it a little bit more.
Right.
That's, yeah. It's one of the pieces, you know, we've gone Google Apps, and probably in the last 2 years have pushed that pretty hard. Calendar is not a feature that we have really pushed on anybody at this point. I would like to do a little bit more with it. We've started a little bit when we have meetings among various peoples to try and use the invite feature so that when somebody schedules a meeting, they just put it on and it shows up on everybody's calendar rather than everybody in the room putting it on their calendar all at once. So that's a piece that hasn't been as important to us, but I think that we will be trying to push that a little bit more as we go ahead.
Awesome. And I heard Melanie mention the fact that it flows through to your website display, and I think that's one of the hidden blessings, kind of. You're thinking about your personal calendars or keeping up with each other, but you can also inform everyone through that website embedding and stuff. So all good uses. So we're actually writing a book about project management, and that's one of our focuses, is the entire project management kind of process. And I guess maybe your drama use is one example of that. That's kind of a project that you put on with lots of different tentacles to it and things, and calendaring obviously plays a big role in that. Do you use any kind of monitoring of your calendar events, notifications, or any specific add-ons or things that help you keep up with things on the calendar?
I haven't used anything like that, but that's because I look at it all the time, so I don't have a need for those notifications, and frankly, I just occasionally find them irritating when I know it's coming up anyway and I don't need a notification. And plus, you know, your device is giving you one and your email is giving you one, and then your device is giving you the email notification. And so I don't often use them. I'm not sure if it would be useful to the students to have that feature, that reminder. I'm not sure. I haven't used that aspect of it much.
Okay.
The it raises a good point, because you have a kind of a closed system. You have a faculty and staff, but do you also use it for volunteers who maybe aren't part of the, you know, kind of the day-to-day operations of your school? Do they take advantage of some of the features that you're using with Google Calendar in any of your areas?
Well, I think, like, our school calendar, like I mentioned before, is kept in a separate system. They we have, it's called Our School, that the activities department can kind of track everything that they're doing. It schedules referees and practices and all of that stuff. And so that's, it's more high power than Google Calendar is, but it can create a custom feed of pretty much anything you want that can pull into Google Calendar. And so that's a feature that we often talk about with parents at or an orientation or something like that, that if you need this information because your kid is in this activity or whatever, you can go to the site, create a custom pull of the activities that you're interested in, and feed that into your Google Calendar. So I know that a lot of people take advantage of that.
That's one of the things that I use on my calendar, and I really like it because you can pick and choose which sports activities you want to get, you want to be put on your calendar. And then it, yeah, it's the Google Calendar, and you can drive that on your phone.
Nice. Probably feeds into our last question for you. Google Calendar tips, tricks, lessons learned. What's the magic that you use to make it all come together for you?
I know that working with these two ladies, they both have attention to detail, and so that's an important feature for me, that the information is accurate and kept up to date, and I really appreciate that they both do that.
So you're saying hire the right people to run the Google Calendar.
Absolutely. And they're not available.
That's great. Very good.
Anything else that you'd want to share about your use of Google Calendar? Maybe somebody just thinking about getting started with it. Any suggestions or first steps that you maybe learned along the way that would help somebody else out?
I know that for me, one of the things that takes a little bit of getting used to sometimes is the process of either sharing a calendar or adding a shared calendar to your calendar. And then especially if you are using a mobile device that maybe doesn't automatically pull the ones that you've added via the web into your mobile device too, that whole process takes a little bit of getting used to. And encouragement for those people that it's worth the pain that you have to go through sometimes to make that work. But once you get it set up, it's
be persistent, and you'll get it. It's not impossible to pick up, at least in my experience, but it can be a little bit tricky. I think a lot of the Google products are a little bit that way. Just kind of the whole paradigm of Google Docs, for instance, the fact that there's not kind of a shared resource or a central resource, but everybody doc needs an owner. And sure. The same is true with a calendar, right?
I actually have one of the calendars on mine as a tasks one, different from the tasks that are on the side. If I have things that I need to do that kind of can be done whenever, I'll put those on the tasks sidebar on the Google Calendar. But what I do, a lot of my job tends to be cyclical things, you know, whether it's monthly or yearly, and I will put them as events on my, what I call my tasks calendar versus the tasks list, for what I have to do, during the week or on a specific day, things that have to go out. So it's there, and I'll put them on the calendar as, an all-day event. It doesn't just have a time, just that I need to get this done sometime today or sometime this week so that I can, that's one of the reasons why I have my calendar up on my computer all the time at work or have a tab open so that I can go back, and it's kind of like a to-do list, but a little bit different from the sidebar tasks.
Is there something you do with the event then if you accomplish the task or when you complete the task?
That's one thing that I don't like about Google Calendar is that then when I complete it, it's not just as easy does usually tend to keep it on and just remember that I'm done. But and if I don't finish it in that day or week that I need to do it, I will, you know, move it forward so that it still is popping up on my calendar.
Sure. And then it gives you a little bit of running history too, you know, year over year, quarter over quarter.
That's kind of what I like it, so that if I, so that I can look back.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Awesome idea.
Well, Joshua and Melanie and Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time. It's I think it's useful to talk to people who actually have taken Google Calendar so far into you know, what it can do, and that's helpful, I think, for our listeners as well. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark and Sally.
Our thanks again to Joshua, Melanie, and Aaron for taking the time. They live and breathe by their calendars, don't they, Sally?
Yeah, definitely. I can see a lot of great work getting done there. I thought Melanie especially was really creative in all of her administrative uses and keeping the, you know, the many people on the faculty and staff all in tune with one another, with vacations and birthdays and holidays and all kinds of things. So great ideas there for using calendaring. And then obviously the example just of one activity on the school front, the drama calendar, and basically that's a project that they're managing and how they're using the calendar and communicating to people using the calendar and communicating with each other, deadlines for set building and all those kind of things. Great example there. And that's just one little area where the calendar can be a very powerful tool in project management.
There were a couple of miscellaneous items that kind of fell into the scheduling chapter, I thought, that probably fit best here rather than any other place, and that is a common task that webmasters have, or anybody that works with a website, is trying to schedule when content appears on the website. And if you haven't kind of fallen to that that little tip of trying to pre-schedule content, this would be a great chapter to read because it's really a valuable tool. If you have to keep a website up to date, you got to stay a little bit ahead of that. And a content scheduler is really a good tool. So we provide an example of that. An example schedule that is not rocket science, but it kind of structures it in a way that you can get ahead of that content posting on your website with all kinds of different things. And it's not just to your website; it could be to social networks or, you know, text messaging or whatever it is. Put that together, and then kind of the tool that makes all that work is what I would recommend everybody take a look at if you have to schedule any content, a tool called Hootsuite. I don't know if we've talked about it on this show. I think we have, and maybe it's even been a pick way back when, but Hootsuite is simply a website where you can enter your content and schedule its posting time. So if you want a post to go out, and it can include pictures and media and or just text or whatever, imagery, put that in the Hootsuite tool, and it can send it out to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram on the schedule that you select. So you don't have to kind of be aware of even what day it is when you're trying to put all this together and trying to get this out at the right time. You can do that months ahead of time. So a great tool for pre-scheduling that. And they have a free version, and then they also have a paid version. I found that the free one works pretty well if you have just a limited set of social networks to work with. If you have more than, I think, three or four, then you need to probably go to the pro version. But works really well and really takes the pressure off of somebody trying to get all this content out, where you can do this all ahead of time and do some planning ahead of time. And that fits nicely into our conversation about scheduling.
Yep, and I think it's quite a project to take on updating social media for a congregation or a school. So definitely something that project management speaks to, and a good fit here. One more section of the chapter that's a little different if I'm remembering correctly, and I'm scrolling as we talk. I'm sorry, it's just the summary. That's all that's left. We've covered most everything that's in the chapter. We also have some links in that summary section to some additional resources to learn more about different calendaring tools. We have a lectionary calendar that's available to integrate with your Google Calendar. It would help you with the project of worship planning if that's on your agenda of things to do. Lots of Google Calendar tips and tricks and things like that. So definitely check out the chapter 5 on scheduling at withallyourheart.tech, and we'll have lots of great links there for you in the chapter.
Yep. So, and again, this is a work in progress, so we would welcome any feedback. Hey, you missed this, or we're expecting you to talk about that. Again, this is not printed yet, so we have an opportunity to make this even better, and we would welcome your feedback on that. So we've got chapters 1 through 5 going. Chapter 6 will be next month, and we'll keep this going until we feel that we've got a workable offering that people can take advantage of and hopefully make their project management days a little brighter. So, all right, shall we move along, Sally, to our news and tech section?
You bet. We actually had some follow-up news related to our show last week, Martin. You'll remember that we started 2016 with a look at virtual reality. We both had our Google Cardboard VR viewers along, those really affordable ways that you can get the virtual reality experience with your smartphone. And interestingly, an article came out this week about how Google Cardboard saved a baby's life. It was from CNN, and a couple of our viewers shared it with us. Angela Richardson and Pam Muskie shared this article based because we had just talked about this in our last show, I believe. Anyway, the story goes that a baby was born, I think she was born in Minnesota, with only one lung and half of a heart. And the doctors in Minnesota pretty much said there's nothing we can do and sent them home without much hope of the baby living and just with hospice care and that kind of thing. But the baby survived for several months, and they began to seek other doctors and ultimately ended up at the Children's Hospital in Miami, where a doctor, where they had some success actually with 3D printing from images of different things. They would 3D print a model and be able to study it. The doctor in the article explains that it's really important that they envision how they're going to be able to help the situation. And they just really couldn't get a vision of how they could help this baby that only had half a heart, didn't have both ventricles or whatever that were feeding the blood as they should. And ultimately, they were going to try this 3D print technique, but the 3D printer went on the fritz. Right when they needed it, they had some technology issues with their 3D printer. And this doctor had been just hearing a little bit about Google Cardboard and playing with it a little bit, and decided to try, I think the website is called Sketchfab. It says in the CNN article that he uploaded images of this baby's heart on this site, Sketchfab, and turned it into a 3D rendition of the heart that he can view, and you can see it if you're watching. You can see my screen where he was viewing the heart through Google Cardboard, and because of that was able to envision how he could help this baby, did the surgery, successful surgery in December, and she is now home off a ventilator and doing very well, thriving very well. And it was just his innovation that he had the idea that maybe he could look at the heart through the Google Cardboard. And as they turned, the heart turned and they saw it from different directions, and it saved the baby's life, and just an amazing breakthrough for them in treating this child.
Awesome. My only hope is that now that it's in the hands of the medical community, it doesn't jack up the price by about 20 times for that $10 piece of cardboard. That's awesome though. I'm sure there's plenty of more of that to come in that space. That makes a lot of sense. So
yeah, just an amazing article.
Cool.
Have to check out Sketch Lab. That's on my list of things to do now.
Yeah, for sure. There's another piece of news that you should probably be aware of, and that is that as of basically today, many people know that this is Microsoft's Patch Tuesday, where Microsoft releases updates to their Windows operating system. Ran across an article today, Microsoft Patch Tuesday kills off Windows 8 and Internet Explorer 8, 9, and 10. Well, you can still use them, but they are no longer supported. They talked about this last year a little bit, and now they are finally pulling the trigger on this, so there is no support. So if you are running any of those, if you're running Windows 8, you need to get up at least to Windows 8.1. I'd recommend going to all the way to Windows 10. And then Internet Explorer, the browser, if that's your browser of choice or that's what's in your organization, make sure you upgrade to Internet Explorer 11, the latest version, because the previous versions will no longer be supported. And what that means is that they're likely to have some security holes in them, and Microsoft is not going to fix them. So it's important that you keep up to date with that stuff. So that's as of today.
That's a pretty big change for some. So good to be on top of that.
Yep. Let's move on to our Wells Now section.
And this is one you'd maybe say a day late and a dollar short, because I should have announced this last week on the podcast. Don't know what I was thinking, but it's time for our January photo challenge. And this month we have a new theme. We're looking for photos of winter, the new year, and our featured verse is Isaiah 1, verse 18, which says, though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be white as snow. So going along with that winter theme, any imagery that might represent that verse would be great. And we're adding those images submitted in the photo challenge to our Wells Tech photo challenge album over on Flickr. All the images are royalty-free public domain images available for free download and use in any way, commercial, non-commercial, whatever. What I want to point out is that we already have some beautiful winter images. There's been a lot of winter going on the last week or so, Martin, and we have some images already up in the photo gallery, and a total of 365 images in our photo gallery. So it's growing by leaps and bounds. I'm just really excited about this collection that we've put together for churches and schools to make use of. So head on over to wellstech.wells.net/photo challenge, and you can learn how to what kind of prizes we're offering, because if you give us images, we're going to enter you in a drawing for prizes. Lots of good stuff going to be given away there in August after the full year is complete, and then that's where you'll find the form where you can upload images, and we give you the option to upload 3 at a time, but you can fill it out as many times as you want. So we'd love to include your images in the album, and we'd love it if our churches and schools in particular are taking advantage of the album and finding some good stuff to help them in their ministry efforts.
Very good. Let's move to the next segment, which is the picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick this week.
Happens every week right after Wells Now, doesn't it? I should be aware of that.
Creatures of habit, yes.
So I want to talk to you a little about the Movi. Movi is a new camera that's available. It's actually only available for pre-order at this point. It's going to be shipped in April of this year. Made a lot of waves at the CES that's happened out in Las Vegas recently. And what it's unique about it is it's designed to work with an iOS app, so it's only for iPhone or iPad, and they have to be at least I think iPhone 5 and up and iOS 9 or greater running on the devices. And it looks like a pretty simple little camera, but what's interesting about it is that you control it on the phone, and this one camera actually gives you 9 different shots at varying angles and zoom. Because of the 4K camera, it's able to divide it up and give you different shots to pick from. And you can control it by pinching to zoom in on things or panning with your finger. So basically, You're getting a multi-shot camera with this one small camera. Pre-order price is $200. They have a white and a black version. They also have an extra piece that's basically an extended battery and has some networking and other capabilities that you can get for $399. Now, these are pre-order prices, $199. The sale price will actually be $399 when it goes live in April. So if you're interested in the pre-order price, I actually have to give a shout out to my friend Tom Rosenau, who pushed me this link a week or two ago and specifically was thinking about multi-angle shots for church live streaming, that it might fill a niche where you don't have to have multiple cameras to do that kind of camera work because of all the different angles and zoom capabilities and things, easy to control with just an iPhone or iPad. So I think that's really neat. I did a little bit of reading and research about it. It actually made a pretty big splash at CES. The Verge did an interview, and you wouldn't believe who's behind it, Martin. It's actually done by our friends at Livestream.
Right.
Product from Livestream, and they're going to have some live streaming subscription plans. I read somewhere that it would be at less than $9 per month, their pricing, and that'll tie into the Movi. The Verge video, which I'll include a link to in the show notes, is an interview from CES with the CEO of Livestream, where he talks about how they've designed it to be very event specific. So allowing you to capture the video, but with a much more professional flair to it with the multi-angles and things like that. So I'm excited about this product. I'd love to get my hands on one and do some playing with it. It looks like it could really be a benefit to congregations in their
church. Yeah, it sounds, just looking at the pictures, I haven't explored the website yet, but looks like, one of the things that makes production a little bit more professional looking is the switching portion of it, switching to different angles, showing things close up, wide angle, whatever. I don't know if you looked at the specs at all. How does the phone communicate with the camera itself? Is it over Wi-Fi or Bluetooth?
I didn't dig that deep. I want to say it's over Wi-Fi. I know it comes with a USB cable, but I think it's just for charging.
For power, right.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just Wi-Fi, but I'd have to triple check that.
And then it sends up, because it's from live stream, I'm assuming that the feed goes directly up to the live stream box, not just back to the phone. So.
Yeah, it does come with an SD card, so you can save the video to the device as well as to your phone. You have that option. And then the Pro actually has some more capabilities. And I read it, but there's tech specs on the website. You'll have to check it out. But
It looks small enough that a church could use this, very discreetly. I think a lot of churches are concerned about cameras hanging all over the place. And this looks like, because it's battery, could be wirelessly placed, or maybe even in other situations like a Bible study, class mm-hmm. or whatever. I assume he's got a microphone built in of some sort.
It does. A microphone built in. And like I said, tech specs are here. So definitely check out the website and you can learn all the things that I'm not up on quite yet.
Yeah. So if you're interested at all, go over and pre-order. If it doesn't fit the bill, I suppose you can return it, but you're going to have some significant savings by pre-ordering. So
half price.
And we're fans of Livestream. That's what we use for all of our stuff here when we do call day and those kinds of things. It's all Livestream. MLC does the same. So
the website is actually GetMovi. It's GetMovi.com.
Very good. All right. My pick of the week is a tool that I've known about but haven't really used a lot until lately, and that's Facebook's Messenger app. They launched this, I want to say, about 6 months ago or so, maybe a year ago. Messenger had kind of been a feature, the ability to kind of message each other Facebook friends, right within the app. They pulled that out, and it's a separate app now on mobile and even on the web. So if you go to messenger.com, you're going to go to the app. You log in with your Facebook login. But they've added quite a bit, and these kinds of tools like WhatsApp and those kinds of things, you know, Facebook Messenger, offer a little bit more to the texting experience. So text messaging has been around for a long time now, but it doesn't have all the features that some tools like some of these closed systems have. And most everybody has a Facebook account, and it's one of the reasons I was kind of drawn to it. If not everybody has an iPhone, that whole iMessage thing kind of goes out the window and is not as useful. This kind of fills a bill there. So you can obviously text, and you get a lot of the benefits of kind of this closed system, because and a lot of things like iMessage can do as well, where you know when messages are delivered and seen. You know, it tells you that, hey, this was successfully delivered. When people, you can tell when people are ignoring you, for instance. It does video and voice calling now. So it's kind of like Skype in that regard, where you can, you know, do a live voice call, and it works over Wi-Fi. You could actually do it over cellular. It's going to burn up some data, however. Video calls as well. I haven't tried the video stuff, but from what I've read, it seems like it's really, really nicely implemented and does a nice job. So you got voice and video. You can send photos, of course, or video. So you can pre-record videos and send those over through Facebook Messenger. You can send your location. And of course, you have what I would call emojis. They call them stickers, all kinds of stickers that you can clutter up your message with. And you can even do voice recordings. They say, sing, or shout your messages. Those come across. One thing that they just recently launched is the ability to send money securely and easily. So you have to plug in your debit card, and you can send and receive money. What was one of my picks of the year last year was Square Cash. This does exactly the same thing, same kind of setup. I think there's a limit on the amount that you can send, but if you're trying to divvy up a dinner bill, or you know, you owe something towards a cell phone bill or whatever, this is a safe way. I have not tried this, but I have set it up to be able to try, and I think I will. Another feature is you can create groups for group chats. So you can, those people that you commonly chat with together, you have the ability to set up groups, give it its own picture, its own color, its own emojis, and just with one click, you can send one message to the same group of people. So a lot of some of the same things that text messaging has, some more of the sophisticated clients, but I think kind of takes it to the next level with a lot of the media that you can do, and the ability to kind of leverage the platform and leverage the fact that Facebook is serving up this content. So that is my pick of the week. I think there's some ministry applications there, and I'm going to continue to explore it and see what it can do.
Awesome.
Do you use Facebook Messenger, Sally?
Well, I was just going to say, you just made Wells Tech's biggest fan very happy, because that would be my mom. And mom, I'll message you when we're done. She watches every week, and she'll love it that you picked that, because that's how we communicate. Me and my two sisters and my mom, that's the Wilson girls, and we are on Messenger all the time. And those stickers that you just made such light reference to, that's
like
big. Yeah,
I breezed right over that. I apologize for that.
My goodness.
I knew I was making a mistake there.
We just have lots of fun with Messenger. We stay in touch quite closely that way, even despite the thousands of miles that separate us. So
yeah, cool technology. Yeah, and it kind of spans, you know, some of those barriers that exist with something like iMessage, where everybody has to have an iPhone or whatever. Most everybody has a Facebook account. So, and I'm not a huge Facebook fan. I mean, I'm on it, but I really cringe at the whole interface and the ads, and you know, I really get lost in the interface. This they've done a nice job with, and hopefully they'll keep their hands off with the ads and such. But it seems like a very clean messaging platform.
Hey, Martin, just talking about Facebook reminds me, I'm going off script here, so get ready. You had a little event you attended this past weekend, and I saw some pictures of it on Facebook. You were at a Wells Intersections breakfast. How'd that go for
you? Yeah, we should have brought that up. Yeah, nice. There's a group that they call themselves Wells Intersections. It kind of grew out of, organically grew out of the Wells Tech Conference this past summer. Pastor James Aderman and a few of his friends got together and said, hey, let's keep this going. So they meet quarterly. So they met 3 months ago. I was not able to attend. I had another commitment, but they asked me to speak at this one. So we gathered down at Divine Peace Lutheran in the south side of Milwaukee, Oklahoma and 76th Street or something like that, and had a good group of people there. I think we had 15 or 20 people there, and just talked about websites. Jim had asked me to speak about the perfect website, and we kind of talked about the considerations around building a church or school website, and had great discussion, had breakfast goodies, and we're there for a couple hours just talking about that. So we're going to do it again in April. If you just search for Wells Intersections on Facebook, you'll find their Facebook page, and you can latch on to the events that are out there. I forget, they're meeting again in the Milwaukee area, and I believe they're talking about video, I want to say, setting your church up for video, whether that's video capture or live streaming, all kinds of, and don't quote me on that, I think that's the topic, but they've got a whole list of really cool topics that they're considering, and they're getting speakers in, and a great group, really passionate about ministry and technology. So if you're in the Southeast Wisconsin area, kind of get that on your radar and take advantage of this group of leaders who are trying to figure out where these intersections are.
Would expect nothing less than a great group when they're Wells Techies. What That's else right. would you expect? So. Ministry resources, Martin, I think you're bringing one to the table today.
I'll bring one, yep. Let me pull up my screen here. I found a blog post, and this is from the YouVersion people, called 7 Days to Your New Bible Habit. And I thought it was a well-written description of some of the steps that you could take now that the new year has started. Good time for New Year's resolutions, especially ones that get you more into the Word. So I thought I'd share that as a ministry resource. Tip number one was start a Bible plan. YouVersion has a ton of Bible reading plans, some as short as a week, some 30 days, some all year. Just excellently done, and it's nicely integrated with the app. So if you want to kind of stay on track, it'll remind you, it'll give you a notification. You can check your progress. It takes you right to the reading, whatever plan it is, a New Testament reading or Psalms, or I'm going to read the Old Testament or whatever it is. Tip number two, enjoy the Bible with friends. The app does that as well, where there's some social components to the tool. But in general, I think it's helpful to have friends to do this with, to kind of keep encouraging you to stay up and maybe have conversations with. Watch Bible stories and videos. The YouVersion app has that. We have lots of videos. There's lots of different ways to do that. Listen to the Bible with audio. What's one of the really neat things about YouVersion? They have these really well-narrated audio versions of the Bible. So you go to the chapter that you're going to read, and you click the microphone, and the narrator can speak as you follow along. They do a great job, and I think that's definitely an option to kind of take your Bible readings to the next level. Create a verse image and share. Sally, we talked about this a while back. In fact, I don't know if that was one of your picks, but sure. It was definitely something that we talked about that YouVersion allows you to do. Take a favorite Bible passage or one that kind of hits you at a particular time, add a background image or your own image, and then post it on Facebook or Twitter or wherever you want. So number six, highlight, bookmark, and create notes. Those are all things you can do in YouVersion. Just kind of gets you deeper into God's Word, get you thinking about what you're reading and meditating on a little bit, kind of a little timestamp of what you thought or what you were thinking at that time, or come back to it if you wanted to. And then number seven, subscribe to the verse of the day. So you have the ability to click a button and get a verse of the day notification. So I thought that was just kind of a nice, obviously it's YouVersion centric, but a lot of the things you could take to other platforms. But again, I'm a big fan of YouVersion. I use it on a regular basis, and these are great tips to kind of get you immersed in God's Word, which how can that be a bad thing?
A great personal tips. We also use the the Bible reading to us in our Bible classes sometimes, when, especially when there's a lot of difficult names and things, we can just turn on the read to us version and play it over the microphone system or whatever. So a use in Bible class as well.
You bet. All right. So that's our ministry resource. We have a featured video, don't we, Sally?
We do. You'll have to check out wellstech.wells.net to see an overview video of the tool Follow Up Then. Actually, we could probably find overview videos for all kinds of tools that we shared in today's show, but Follow Up Then is one that I think will be very valuable to those who adopt it. It's an easy way to have email reminders sent to you just when you need them. So check out the overview video. It's only a minute or so long, and it'll give you a good idea of how the tool works.
That brings us to the end of another show. We're going to do it again next week, but we're going to be in the same place at the same time. I'm going to go up to New Ulm. Evangelism Day is next Wednesday at Martin Luther College, and I'm presenting on, what am I presenting on? Digital Christianship is what I call it, kind of a takeoff on digital citizenship, how to live your life virtually, and how to live your faith virtually, as well as, you know, in the real world. So who are you on Facebook, Twitter? Are you the, you know, the same ambassador for Christ that that God calls you to be there, as well as, you know, in the face-to-face analog world? So I'll be doing that, but then that evening or late afternoon, we are going to have a couple of professors from Martin Luther College join us. James Karlofsky and Jim Grinwald are going to join us and talk about teaching with tech. There's kind of a new focus there, Sally. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think that's a good way to say it. Yeah, they are getting real up to date with all the technology here on campus. I think Jim and James will be able to show us some of the new tools that they have available for the students to make use of. I think it'll be a lot of fun to learn about. One note is that we won't record till Wednesday, so it won't be released until Thursday next
week.
Good
point.
Yeah. But
it'll be worth the wait.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Sally. And thank you to our viewers and listeners for tuning in one more time. Please, again, join us next week for 428 from beautiful, sunny, praying New Ulm, Minnesota. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. God's blessings.